We have a healthy lifestyle by the sea. We eat organic and gluten-free.
We do Bikram yoga and Pilates. We like soy lattes and goji berries.
Fuck carbs, fuck fats, fuck calories. I snack on fucking celery.
And then on the weekend I just don't eat, cause I'll be smashing lines off of toilet seats. Don't you read my tweets? I'm off my head, my heartbeat stopped.
Fuck, you should be dead.
That was intense.
Do you wanna go to bed?
No brah, let's eat some caps instead.
You know what that sounds like to me?
No man,
it sounds like irony.
Hey man, if we just found irony, do you know how ironic that would be?
Macabolic Podcast!
Hello, welcome to episode 46 of the Macabolic Podcast. And today I am in the Macabolic recording studio with Will Berkman. Say hello, Will.
G'day.
Right. So I consider myself to be a little bit of a diet guy. I've kind of sort of gone down that route in terms of my education, what I focus on and the services I offer. But I still do a lot of personal training. I have a lot of one-on-one face-to-face clients that I actually see. I write training programs and I kind of know some stuff about that reasonably well. And you know, this podcast is mostly about nutrition, but I like to branch out and talk about health and how nutrition can help that. But training is certainly something that comes into this. Now, the things that make this even, the things where this gets more confusing is Will Berkman here is actually a dietitian. So on paper, he's definitely more of a diet guy than me and knows a shitload about nutrition. But we've got him on this podcast to talk about training. Furthermore, Will is actually also my own personal trainer. Like, I literally pay this guy to train me, which mostly just ends up
shit-talking for an hour.
Yeah. Showing me bullshit videos on his phone and telling me about the time he got locked in his fucking bathroom naked and the mirror broke.
Yeah.
So just before we get into the podcast, like, I've already told everyone that you're a dietitian and that you might fucking train, unfortunately. But do you want to just give them the quick lowdown?
I feel like that was a pretty glowing and complete appraisal of my areas of expertise. Will Berkman. I am a dietitian, so my master's is in nutrition and dietetics. I have an undergrad degree in exercise and sports science. I've been personal training for about 5 years and doing a little bit of informal coaching on the side prior to that. My competitive sport now is powerlifting, and I coach a lot of powerlifters. And write articles and have a podcast and things directed largely to powerlifters, but also to people just interested in strength and hypertrophy. I've represented the country a couple of times and coached at the national and international level and stuff for that as well. But I guess with my educational background and just my general interests as well, you know, I would say that I spend a decent amount of my time talking to people about training just for general strength, health, and muscle building, and then, you know, apply those same principles to powerlifting in a more specialized context. So that's more or less me.
Yeah, cool. That's cool. So one question I often get asked, even though nutrition is my primary thing, is how should I train? What should I do for my training? Or even when someone, you know, has had a niggle, or you know, that they might have been injured or just really busy, and they've told me in their nutrition check-ins that they didn't train, they kind of panic a little bit and they're like, oh, how should I train? Like, and I'm just like, oh, you know, don't worry about it, like a week off is gonna be okay, just get your steps in, like be generally active. But I want to go into training, and I want to sort of answer the question globally, being how do you build a good training program 101 for dummies? Now, we'll start off by saying, well, the first thing, if your goal is general health and some notable fat loss, not to an extent where you're very, very lean or, like, you know, pushing the boundaries, but the first port of call or thing you kind of want to box, you want to tick, if you will, is simply just to get active. And it's probably something that you want to do consistently, so you can actually adhere to it, right?
Yeah, I think there's actually lots of ways
plenty
I could
ways.
Take answering that, but yeah. First port of call is, like you said, to get active and do something consistently. And I think people, particularly in this day and age where there's a lot of, like, exercise science being spoken about in the popular media, people almost get too worried about optimizing things instead of worrying about feasibility. So I think, like, first port of call is actually saying, how much time and resources do I have to dedicate to training? How motivated am I to do it? So how many days do I want to spend in the gym? What equipment do I have at my disposal? What are my actual goals? So nut out things like that before you actually get too worried about, you know, like nitpicking in program design. Once you've got a vague idea that says, hey, I want to go to the gym, whatever it is, 3 times a week for 1 hour, then you can actually start building something workable. If you say, you know, I want to lose fat and the absolute optimum training approach is going to be training 5 days a week for an hour or something like that, those numbers are figurative, by the way. If you start thinking that and it doesn't align with your actual goals and motivation as a person, then it's not going to work for you to do that training. So not out, what are you actually willing to do? What time are you going to spend in the gym? And then from there, we can design a training program that actually meets the goals that you've set.
But to pull things like right back from that is even just something where you're moving at the very baseline is going to be the first, like, most important thing, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Over training. But then if you go into the idea of, well, I actually want to notably improve the way I look and I'm willing to take a trade-off over doing something that's active that I enjoy. Like, let's say you love surfing, okay? But improving your physique is kind of important, so you'd be willing to go into the gym rather than just surfing to stay active. It's at that point where I want to start. Now, you've already gone into a lot of things you got to consider, like what do you have available to you, how many, you know, what's feasible in terms of times per week, how long you're going to spend in the gym, blah, blah, blah. So,
guess what you are describing there is the difference between, in exercise science literature, you might call it like a lifestyle exercise intervention, as opposed to, you know, a resistance training or aerobic training intervention, where one, you know, the latter, which is what we talk about when we talk about programming largely, that is structured exercise with training adaptations as a goal. If you are going from a baseline of no exercise whatsoever, then any lifestyle exercise is going to yield you great benefits. And if it happens to be that you do nothing now, but you love surfing, and that's where you're willing to start, then that's a great place to go. But I presume today we're going to talk largely about training interventions. So going in, doing something with the goal of getting adaptations.
Yeah, I wanted to just cover that off because some people feel like they absolutely must train or nothing. It's not a matter of training in the gym with a program or nothing. For some people, probably just getting moving, like literally even just going, getting some steps in, is probably a better thing for their long-term health improvement, considering what's feasible and what they'll actually do for an amount of time that's, you know, worthwhile and actually beneficial. You know, if they go into a gym but only lasts for a week, then it's kind of like, you know, well, you could have just probably just gone for a swim and you might be a better person by the end of, say, 12 weeks from now.
In fact, what you just said is entirely borne out by the data. So when you look at research showing... yeah, you're correct. If you look at research showing the, you know, risk reduction for overall all-causes mortality with exercise dosing, the biggest reduction, and it's enormous, is going from doing no exercise at all to doing just a little bit.
Yeah.
So whatever exercise you happen to do, if you do it, you will get benefits from it.
Yeah.
Going from there towards optimal still gets you more and more improvement up until the point where you're training like an elite athlete, and at that point you're crazy. But, you know, doing more gets you more past that point. But if just doing the things you love get you started and keep you doing it, then by all means, that's the best place to go.
Absolutely. So let's say we're at the point where we've decided that going into the gym is something that we think is worthwhile, and we're actually going to be able to do it consistently. Now, we haven't looked at how many times we're going to train per week or any of that stuff, but what are the first and foremost objectives of going to the gym? And I'll start off that by just saying, let's retain muscle tissue or lean mass while we try and rid ourselves or reduce our body fatness.
Yeah, I think, look, I think that's a goal from a physiological level. I think if you're the absolute layman coming into the gym for the first time, or you're just, you know, a relatively new trainee trying to add some structure to your training, your goal is that. But in terms of what you're actually going to do in the gym, your goal is to get broadly more proficient at the movements that you do. And that will be borne out physiologically by the maintenance or growth of new muscle mass, by improved strength, other adaptations and things to tissues. But we don't really observe that. If you're going to the gym for your general health and fitness, you'll see things like changes in the scale weight or, you know, improved strength, improved function, improved look. And the things that you do in the gym to facilitate that are basically getting better at the movements that you've chosen to train.
Yeah, totally. But in a physiological sense, if someone was like, oh, just have general health and maybe some bit of weight loss goals, okay, the first thing we want to tick off if we are going to the gym is just doing enough that we're at the very least allowing ourselves to retain muscle while dropping body fat, because we're in a deficit, and if we're not giving our body a reason to sort of like hold on to the muscle tissue we've got, there's a strong argument that, you know, you might just end up with weight loss, not fat loss.
Yeah, and that's totally the case as well. So again, looking back at data, when you combine like diet interventions alone are excellent for weight loss, resistance training interventions alone are not great for weight loss. Diet and resistance training exercise together get you good weight loss, but they also get you maintenance or growth of muscle tissue. So in terms of actually improving body composition, combining those two are great. So yeah, that's first port of call, absolutely what you're after.
Yeah, and if you can maintain lean tissue and potentially even add some muscle mass on it, the fat loss component of what you're trying to achieve is going to be much more easy, because you have a reduced reduction in any sort of metabolic slowdown. I like to call it that because it's just lameness. Metabolic slowdown as a result of being in a deficit. Okay, so we know we want to go to the gym. We know we want to, at the very least, do something to just hold on to the muscle we're trying to get.
Mm-hmm.
So in a more physiological sense, would you say apply enough tension across enough muscle fibers at a sufficient dose to allow for appropriate frequency of application is something very, very complicated, but somewhat appropriate in what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, that sounds complicated. that actually is more complicated than I'd have phrased it, but that's absolutely correct.
Okay.
So I'm going to attempt to extremely laymanize that. What that is to say is you basically need to lift heavy enough or do things that are effortful enough on a set-by-set basis that you are promoting some adaptation. Do it enough to promote the adaptation, give yourself sufficient recovery to come in and do it again.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever you happen to do, train it reasonably hard, recover enough to come in and train it also reasonably hard again at another time.
Yeah, so it's enough sufficiently hard sets of lifting weights.
Yes.
Enough times a week or over time that will allow for enough recovery. So if you do much, you're not allowing for enough recovery.
Yeah.
Within the constraints of frequency of going to the gym.
That was terrifically well said. So what Mac is saying, which I entirely agree with, is that however often you're going to train a muscle group, or go to the gym in general, you need to do enough training to have stimulated an adaptation, but not so much that the next time you come in intending to train hard, you are still so fatigued that you can't actually put in the effort that you have to continue to promote adaptation. So we're trying to titrate stimulus and recovery.
Yeah, that's so what it's that ratio, stimulus, recovery, and then there's the fatigue side of things, I would say.
Yes.
Okay, so we know we've got all these boxes we want to tick.
Mm-hmm.
Enough, hard enough, not too much though that we do too much.
Yeah.
So where do we start? So would we start with, say, here's an amount or probably an amount, and then how would we split that? Where would we sort of go from there in terms of volume? So I'm basically saying volume.
How much volume?
Well, yeah, good news. Is that where you would start? And then you would start loading in exercises, or how would you
go
about it?
Like
from the very base level.
I wouldn't start with volume. And that might shock people who do have a backing in exercise. But if we're talking people who are relatively new to the gym, I don't think focusing on the quantity of work you do is as important. Because when look at data, or look at research examining people who are brand new to the gym, and they adapt really well whether you give them very low volumes or moderate to high ones, there's actually reason to believe that people who are really brand new to the gym will adapt worse from volumes that are too high. One of the reasons is when you train, you get what's called the repeated bout effect. So you get some protection from disruption from training. You get a little bit less muscle damage. You recover more quickly. You're less sore. You have less fatigue and a shorter duration of fatigue from a given training stimulus. When you're new to training, you don't have those benefits. So you don't have that resilience to training. Doing a whole lot can make you really sore, and it can be demotivating and make training feel worse. And it doesn't necessarily net you a whole lot more adaptation. So rather than worrying too much about volumes when you're just starting out, I would actually do what you said second, which is pick movements and things. So get a few basic movement patterns that you can train well, that can take muscles through a full range of motion, that you feel technically competent in doing, or that you can develop technical competency in with coaching from somebody. Focus on getting proficient with them. And when you're new to training, the training doesn't need to be extremely hard on a set-by-set basis. It should feel like, you know, if you're doing a set of 10, you could, you know, probably do a few more reps with good form, but you certainly couldn't keep going all day. Focus on getting relatively proficient in those movements over your first couple of weeks. And then once you're proficient, you start pushing it more towards I'm finishing my sets and feeling like I couldn't do many more reps, add a set or two here and there to those movements, adding load across the board until you're getting to the point where your training has gone from introducing movements, learning what to do well, it's gone from there towards actually training and really trying to provide some stress. But first port of call is pick some movements that you're comfortable in doing that address all of your needs, so address most of the main muscles of the body and most of the main movements. Start learning them. We can talk about what those muscles and movements are.
Yeah.
And then we start adding volume. Once you've been in the gym for a little while, then it's time to start thinking about training variables like that. Yeah.
That sounds like a very sound approach. And to add to that, I would agree that, you know, we should go for sufficient, not maximal, which is something you always used to say to me when I used to think I used to do, you know, need to do 40 sets per body part per week.
Yeah.
So especially you're starting out, like, you've got to think, like, you're not... Training isn't a part of your life. And if you're going to actually adhere to it and do it for enough time, you sort of need to be very slow in how you implement it into your routine. So there is, like, doing more than you need might maybe yield some more returns, arguably not. But why would you anyway? It's just not worth it, because making sure that you're actually showing up is the most important thing. So I would say do as little as possible, actually, to still do enough. Okay, so we're at the point where we've got our movements.
Yeah.
We've kind of been in the gym for a few weeks.
Shall we talk movements, or shall we just presume?
We'll come back to it.
All right.
So, actually, no, you're right. Let's talk about someone starting out. What should they do in their first week of training? You know, provided they're free of injuries and, you know, reasonably coordinated, and especially aware of what their limbs are doing.
Okay. Well, that's a dangerous presumption, but... But again, presuming that, you know, all your bits are attached and you can actually lift weights, again, the evidence doesn't really suggest that for people who are really new to training, that doing much isolation work gets you much more than just doing basic compound movements. And when we say compound movements, what we mean is movements where multiple joints are doing a job. So instead, I think it's a really good place to start to sort of divide the body up and think about just basic movements you can do. So with the lower body, we can do things that resemble a squat. So we would call that a knee dominant lower body movement.
Mm-hmm.
We can do hip hinging things. So for people who are familiar with training, you might think about things like deadlifting, to a degree hip thrusts, stuff like that. So you've got two big basic lower body movements. I also think it's worth doing some unilateral lower body stuff.
So that means one leg.
Yeah. And one-legged stuff is great because it puts a bit of extra stress on the lateral hips and the abs and things. Lateral hips, side of your hips. So it gets you better at balancing where things like your knees and hips and shoulder girdle are moving relative to each other.
Shoulder girdles.
If you don't know what your shoulders are, I'd be surprised that you're listening to a training.
The shoulder girdle.
Okay. Point is, some stuff on one leg is also worth doing, and it would be a slightly lower priority than doing just big basic knee dominant and hip dominant moves for the lower body. For the upper body, you can think of pushing and pulling in the vertical and horizontal direction. So doing those basic things, and there's a whole bunch of movements that could fit in any of those categories. Yep. So taking just horizontal pushing as an example, everybody wants to bench press. That's a very good horizontal pushing movement, but things like a push-up count as well, dumbbell presses count too, you know, any number of things that you can do. You can do push-ups on a TRX machine. That's totally fine as well. But anything where you're pushing in that plane relative to your torso would count.
Yeah.
So when I say you have freedom to select movements, movements that you feel technically competent in and that you can overload over time, so ones that you can add weight to or add reps to that are going to stay hard for a while, basically picking any one of them where you have the equipment available to you, you feel competent to do it and it's safe, is a great place to go. And if you're an absolute beginner, that means sticking in the machine area can be totally fine as well. If you don't have somebody who can guide you through the movements, you can sit there on a hammer strength horizontal pressing machine and get all the adaptations to your chest that you would doing a free weight bench press.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
You don't
need to do free weights, and the idea that, especially when you're a beginner or even advanced, really, especially when you're advanced, when you consider like people who are jacked and, you know, potentially have injuries, like, fuck, you do not need to do only free weights.
No, not at all. There's a huge number of advantages to machines. There's also times when free weights are absolutely necessary, and there's other advantages that they have. But certainly, if you're just starting out, you don't necessarily have to think that any movement is better than another. It's more which ones can you do competently and you get better at when you come to the gym. So pick them on that basis and you're going to be off to a pretty good start.
Okay, so we've got a list of the movements we think we can do that we've divvied off based on the category, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how should we split those movements over a week? Like, should we do it, you know, would we put horizontal push on the Monday? Like, where, how do we do that? Would you consider how many times a week you want to train, how long you want to spend on those times?
Yeah, I think considering how often you want to spend in the gym or how often you want to go to the gym is a really good place to start, and how long you have to do it. When you're a beginner, you should be able to get through a full body workout relatively quickly because you're only going to do a couple of working sets, and it doesn't take you 45 minutes to warm up if you're going to squat a 12 kilo kettlebell. Like, it just doesn't take long. So you can get through it very quickly. So full body workouts a few times a week are going to be great. If for one reason or another you do want to split things up into working the separate body parts, that's a totally
fine. As you
do like a push day on a Monday. Yeah.
Pull day on Tuesday and legs on. Or Monday when, yeah.
Yeah, if you want to go to the gym 5 times a week and train, push on Monday, pull on Tuesday, you know, legs on Wednesday, upper body on Thursday and lower body on Friday or something like that, that's actually totally fine as well. And again, when you look at the research, people who do like low frequency training as novices still get training benefit, but it's not necessary. So if you want to go just a few times a week, do everything each time you go, great. If you want to go 4 times a week and do upper body on one day, lower body on another,
and then repeat. Great.
Yeah. So long as you find your schedule workable and you can get through the work at a high quality, frequency or the way in which you distribute it is a little bit less important at this stage.
Personally, I think for people who are learning movements, having a high instance of practicing a movement is a good idea. So if you're learning to drive a manual car, you practice for 2 hours on a Monday, but then don't practice again until Monday next week, I would personally, logically, based off what I've seen, I would think that to be not as good as doing, say, half an hour on Monday, half an hour on Wednesday, half an hour on Friday, hypothetically, to use that as, you know, like a way of explaining how you would split up, say, a lower body knee dominant exercise hypothetically.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way of looking at it as well. So when I say that it's like viable to do lower frequency training, I don't necessarily think it's as good, but if it suits your preference and it keeps you going to the gym, fine. Otherwise, max analogy is a really good one. You basically want to expose yourself to that training stimulus and that technical practice as frequently as you can recover from it. So that's a good way of thinking about it.
Yeah. Okay, so we've done this, you know, we've been training for 3 or 4 weeks and we're getting better at the movements, we're adding a little bit of weight, technique seems to be good, and we start to consider the dose of volume we're doing per body part per week. Okay, so how many reasonably hard sets of, say, the horizontal pushing movement are we doing per week? Now, you mentioned to me before in conversation that you prefer to split it up as, rather than a movement, a group muscle. Of muscles, so like pecs or like chest. How would you go about sort of getting to like step 1.5? Because I don't even want to call it step 2 yet.
Yeah. Okay, so you introduced the idea of muscle groups there. The reason that those movements that I introduced earlier are good fundamental training tools is because if you train all of them, most of the major muscle groups of your body are going to receive some training stress. So using them as a proxy for counting volume, so the amount of work you do per muscle group, is a good way to start. If you can actually figure out which muscles are working in the movement, so you have a baseline in anatomy or you have somebody helping you, you can do that as well. But let's just stick with calling them movements for the time being. If you are training multiple times a week for a given muscle group, then probably doing somewhere between 3 and 8 sets for that muscle group each time you train it is going to give you close to the best gains you're going to get for muscle and strength. If you're more advanced, those numbers need to bump up a little bit, but say you're relatively new to training, you know, 3 to 5 sets, maybe 5 to 8 if they're reasonably easy sets, is going to give you really robust gains. And if you do that twice a week, that gets you landing somewhere in the sort of 6 or 8 to 10 or 15 sets per week range.
Yeah. I like to, like, just to add in there, I think it's a good idea to go, how many reasonably hard sets am I doing for this body part or muscle group dash movement pattern per week? Because then that gives you an opportunity to split. So say you've got the dose that you know would roughly be appropriate.
Yep.
Say hypothetically it's 12. You could then split that over how many sessions you prefer. So you could split your 12 over 4 sessions if you wanted to train your whole body four times a week. Yeah. You could split it over two sessions if you perhaps want to do like upper, lower, even mm-hmm. the four sessions a week. That gives you the flexibility to choose something you prefer. And the difference in the result it makes at this point is going to be quite minimal, if not really anything, right?
Yeah, I more or less agree with that. The reason I'm hesitant to give extremely tight numbers at this stage is because there's a huge interrelationship between both how hard your sets are and how much you can recover, and just the individual that you have in front of you and how much volume they can recover from. And when you look at the responses for a large number of individuals to a given training dose, the variability is really massive. And what's more, if you actually change the nature of the training you give people, so I'll talk about that in a second, their response to it can change enormously as well. So there's some research, I've forgotten the researcher's name, which is irritating, but there was some research where people were doing, I think 9 or 12 sets, 9 sets of leg extensions close to failure, training on 3 occasions per week. They did it for 9 weeks. Oh no, it's 12 sets for 9 weeks. Anyway, point is, the average muscle growth was about 6% over those times, right? There was an individual that gained 3 times as much, so gained about 18%, and there were a number of individuals who gained literally zero from that training dose, right? that unfortunately might be Matt, right? Sorry, but got to keep that direct debit running, so you just need more time.
Don't be surprised if my card bounces next week.
But, you know, so some people are just not going to gain very well from a given training dose. There's some other research that's examined what happens when you increase the training dose for a given individual. And for some people, the increase in gains they get is really robust. They'll literally triple their rate of gains by tripling the amount of work they do. For other people, their rate of gain won't increase at all. Yeah. For very few people, if you're within reasonable ranges, it might even decrease. But for the most part, you're talking about the difference between getting no more for doing more work or getting a really good amount more, and you can't necessarily predict that. And then the third thing I spoke about, the nature of training, is that there was a really interesting paper. It was done on elite rugby players where they had 4 very distinct training programs. And what they actually did was test like a hormonal response to the training programs and make people either do the one that seemed most favorable or least favorable for a few weeks at a time. Yeah, well, the people who did the really favorable program got really great gains in 3 weeks. And if they did the unfavorable one, many of them actually lost strength. You know, they didn't lose size across 3 weeks. But by swapping them over between the two, they saw that that effect was basically mirrored. So if you went from the one that was poor to the one that was good, you went from making no gains or small losses to making great gains. And if you went from the one that was great to the one that was bad, you went from making great gains to making small losses. So at this point in your training journey, provided that you know that your training volumes are somewhere sensible, you know, you're doing a few hard sets a few times a week, or you're doing a decent number of hard sets once or twice a week, and you're recovering from it, you're not walking into the gym really sore or too tired to repeat the workouts that you did from the last week, you're probably okay. What you should actually be looking for is improvements in your performance and improvements in your physique. So if you are, from your current training dose, able to come in and repeat what you did plus a little bit more on a week-by-week basis, you're doing great. Don't need to worry too much about the number of sets you're doing. If you're not, if you're coming in and you're like, wow, I'm not getting any better, but I'm feeling really fresh, you can probably push it a little bit more. If you're hating the training you're doing, or you just feel really burnt out by the end of a session, maybe you'd benefit more from going a bit heavier or going a bit lighter or changing the nature of the movements you do somehow. You know, changing your rest periods even might help you. But if you're broadly feeling okay and you're getting better, don't worry too much about the number of sets you're doing. Just keep doing what you're doing and make changes when your progress starts to slow down or stop.
Yeah, sort of gauge it based on how you feel. Yeah. I do think, yeah, absolutely. Even at like absolute baselines, without any training at all, there is a large variability in appropriate amounts of work
over your time
frame. Like my mum, who I've just started training, like
yeah.
She does 3 sets, probably like multiple reps away from failure of a lunge, and she like 3 of them, and that's enough for the week.
That runs in the family.
No, that doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, actually, maybe for the week.
Yeah, it does definitely.
And like if she did anything more than that, then the following week, like literally 7 days later, she would probably see a detriment in her ability to train because she would still be sore. And it takes a few weeks of sort of like just getting the groundwork in to sort of gauge, you know, what an appropriate amount of work is. So like, for example, training my mum, it took me like a week or two. I start obviously starting off very conservatively, but it took me a week or two to properly realize, okay, the amount of, you know, work this individual can tolerate or needs to do is very, very low. Mm-hmm. And then if you're the opposite, where if you first start out and you feel fine, as you mentioned, you know, you might want to do a little bit more if you feel fresh and all that sort of stuff.
Well, entirely by contrast, I train my mum, who's
yes.
of a similar age to your mum. She was in this morning, has the Mac.
It was very good. But, it was very good to watch.
But my mum can chew through work. It can be really hard.
Yeah.
And the quality of work doesn't drop off over a number of very hard sets. And she gets better week by week. So, you know, she'll do 5 sets of deadlifts, all of which are very hard.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow she'll go and do some weird strongman workout. She has another personal trainer. She,
what?
Yeah, I know, crazy.
Yeah, well, she'll my go mom and, actually also has another personal trainer. So.
Yeah. But,
I'm
you know,
working on getting him sacked.
Right. Well, no, I really like this guy. But she'll go do some strongman stuff with him tomorrow, having done 5 hard sets of deadlifts today, and she'll be fine, you know? So she just recovers from and shoots through a good lot of work. And what I've realized over, you know, months of training her is she needs to do 5 or 6 toughish sets of deadlifts. When she does a little bit less, she gets through it really easily. She doesn't get a whole lot better. I haven't yet had to push more for her to continue getting better. But you will see that variability yourself. So provided you're somewhere in that sensible range of doing a few hardish sets a few times a week, you're probably okay, provided you're actually getting the return on those sets that you should. If you're not, and you can improve your actual output in your training sessions, so do it with better technique or, you know, do it with higher effort or something per set, have a look at that. If you can't do that, you're still not getting the returns, then maybe add some sets here and there or add a session.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. All right, let's start to go into a per set basis
mm-hmm.
and look at reps and the failure point. So when I started training, I was like, oh, this rep range is better than this, or you should do this exercise. It has to be like 8 reps, you know, bench press, walking through sets of 8, brother, go halfway now, get your mate to pretty much spot you in most of the lifting. Anyway,
yeah.
The idea behind reps, I think, is overplayed. I really think that, like, obviously, well, you probably agree with me, that it's more about, you know, in most instances of just general training and doing enough hard work. It's just about the failure point
mm-hmm.
and just literally warming up, doing a few practice reps, a set, sorry, and then maybe just picking a weight that you might think would be appropriate to meet muscle failure or close to muscle failure between, say, I don't know, 6 to 15 repetitions.
Yep.
And then simply starting a set and stopping when you're relatively close to failure,
mm-hmm.
irregardless of how many reps you achieve within like moderate ranges is probably going to be a much better thing than saying I'm going to definitely do 8 reps and then achieving 8 reps across the 3 working sets you told yourself you were going to do.
Yeah, I think what you just said then is really good.
But and it sounds really complicated and shit.
No, not really. But I think the good thing as well is that you also bound it by giving that moderate rep range. So it is true when we're just talking about growing muscle.
You can do it up to 30 reps, right?
Yeah, you could do it up to really high reps. Well, exactly. Or you could do it with very low reps. But at either end of the spectrum, there's practical issues with doing it, right?
Yeah.
When you do a 30 rep set close to failure, first things first, you've done 25 reps that don't really make you grow at all. But secondly, you have this awful burning sensation that means you're not going to want to do many hard sets. When you do lots of heavy work, it's time consuming, it's hard on your joints. But if you pick weights that you can lift in the 6 to 15 or 5 to 12 range or something and do sets that are relatively tough, and we'll talk about exactly how tough, then you're probably going to promote about the same amount of adaptation. I also think what you said about warming up to a weight appropriately, so doing a few practice sets, you know, doing your final one about 10% lighter than your working weight, and then just starting work is a good way to approach it. Because if you, let's take an example here and say that you've been doing your bench presses and, you know, last week you did 60 kilos and you did whatever it happens to be, 6 reps, or let's say 8 reps, 6 reps and 6 reps in your 3 sets. You can probably say that next week 60 kilos is going to be about ballpark hard enough. Again, if you come in and do 3 hard sets, for you to still be sitting somewhere in that 6 to 15 range. And if you come in and you do whatever it is, 10, 9 and 8 this week, then you've seen numerical progress because you've gotten a few more reps out at the same load. You know that the training stimulus is going to be roughly similar, and we can talk about exactly why as well in a moment if you want. But you know, you've done something reasonably appropriate. Whereas I think, like you said, if you pigeonhole yourself into lifting an exact rep number and then arbitrarily increase the weight, before you've actually seen a meaningful increase in performance, then you run the risk of running into a wall very quickly in your training. Now, the reason why sets need to be reasonably close to failure to promote full adaptation is the way that your muscles work, or the way that your body works to produce force, is that your brain sends signals to the muscles that say contract. But when you think of any given muscle, so when you think of, say, your pecs, it's not just one sort of slab of meat. It's actually made up of a whole bunch of muscle fibers, and they're grouped in a number of ways, but they're grouped functionally into something called a motor unit, which, so motor units are a whole bunch of muscle fibers that are innervated by one nerve, right? And what happens is, if that nerve sends a signal, every fiber in that motor unit contracts and produces force.
Yeah.
And your motor units differ in size. So some have very few fibers and some have a very large number of fibers. Mm-hmm. And something called the size principle informs how they're recruited. And basically what happens is, the smaller motor units are recruited first, so the ones that have the fewest fibers and produce the least force. And the reason that's important is because if you go to do a low force activity, so say you're, you know, holding something very fragile between two fingers, if all you could do is contract maximally hard, you'd crush that thing, right? So you need to be able to produce very fine amounts of force. But as force producing demands go up, your brain recruits more and more fibers, so it sends signals through to more and more motor units, and you rapidly ramp up to, you know, to high force production. If you lift really heavy weights, your brain basically sends a signal to every available motor unit and says, like, you know, righto troops, like, let's go, we're gonna lift this thing up, right? But if you lift a weight that isn't the heaviest thing that you can possibly lift, you'll start by recruiting only some number of those motor units, you know, whatever it happens to be, the majority of them, but not all. And then as some motor units that have been doing the work get tired, your brain goes, oh crap, I better get some other troops to the party here, or else I'm not gonna be able to keep doing this. So it starts recruiting the larger motor units. And then eventually, every fiber in your muscle has been subjected to tension. The last about 5-ish reps of a set usually involve every fiber that you have at your disposal, right? Or at least every fiber has been subjected to tension. If you stop way, way short of that, then you don't apply tension to every fiber. And because there's no fatigue, even the fibers there's very little fatigue, even the fibers that have been doing the work aren't maximally stimulated. Yeah. So things, provided they are in that moderate range, if they're close enough to failure, you've probably made the entirety of that muscle do some meaningful work, which means the entirety of that muscle will probably have some adaptation as a result of the work that you have done.
Yeah, so I guess, like, if I was trying to explain that to, like, you know, someone from school or whatever,
you could just play them that clip.
Yeah, or I would probably just be like, think about a muscle as a ship, and a motor unit is one motor in that ship. And let's say that motor actually has lots of engines. It's got like 10 engines and 10 propellers. And you're like, okay, we want to cruise, so we'll just turn on two of the motors and we'll drive two of the propellers. Although in the instance of a muscle, one motor would probably drive like multiple propellers.
Yeah, yeah. No,
but then the captain was like, oh, we want to go a bit faster now, so fuck, we'll turn on two more motors. And then, you know, when you want to go full power, or whether you need to like give your full effort, then you've got all your motors switched on. Mm. They're all pumping at full pelt, and that would be like total recruitment of the muscle, being in this instance the ship, right?
Yeah. So
put that out there. I think it's all right.
Yeah, it's an okay analogy. You could do it some work. We'll talk about that after.
Well, I just thought of that on the spot. So come on.
but that's more or less how it works. So, you know, the work has to be hard enough that your body is forced to use more or less all of the resources at its disposal. But provided you're in that money range of feasible repetitions, just doing stuff that is hard enough is good enough. And let's bring it back to my example of somebody benching 60 kilos. So if all of those sets stopped about 2 reps short of failure, so you thought, I could have done 2 more, probably couldn't have done 3 more, right? The first week, if you've done 8 reps, then 6 reps, then 6 reps, right? All of those have been 2 reps shy of failure.
Yeah.
A week passes, you've adapted, you've actually gotten stronger, your muscles can do more work, right? The first set, when you get 10 reps out and could have done 12, all that's happened is the training stress has actually increased concomitantly with the adaptation you've experienced.
Yeah.
Because now, instead of stopping at 8 reps like you would in our arbitrary example, where you don't go up until you can do 8 reps, instead of stopping there and not getting those extra reps where every motor unit was recruited, you've kept going to 10. So you've put a little bit more training stress in. Then next time, you know, you do 8 reps, where before you did 6, because you're about 2 reps stronger with that weight. And once you get to the point where you are doing a reasonable number of reps with a given weight, you think, okay, I can afford to increase the weight and still land in this money range, you do so, and the training stress has naturally increased with your abilities.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah, I think basically summing it up, and I'm sort of alluding back to what I said before, I think just like saying, okay, I've got this movement, this is what I did last week. And I think looking at it maybe as like, say you had more, you know, the more advanced you are, you probably want to look at it per set basis. But if you're sort of like a newbie, I think looking at average reps achieved over the amount of working sets you did, or total reps achieved. So let's say you did 3 working sets and you got, you know, 8-8. Or I don't know, let's say you got 10-9-8, whatever that equals in total, because you shit at
math. Yeah,
27. So you would have done 27 reps over 3 sets. I think looking at it like that is a good idea when you come into the gym the next week and saying, okay, well, I need to achieve, I've got 3 working sets to do, I need to achieve at least 27 reps over these, with this load. But then, you know, warming up, using the appropriate load, and whether that's more than the week before might be the case, but it could be the same. And then saying, okay, well, I know what I did last week, I'm just going to start doing reps with standardized technique as what I did the week before. And then I'm going to stop maybe 1 rep closer to failure than I did the week before in order to create that progression. But even if I keep the reps left in reserve on a per set basis, because there may have been an adaptation from the previous week of stimulus, you might find that you could do more, but keep the same proximity to that failure point.
Yeah, I think your ability to do more at the same level of difficulty is a really good indication that you are getting better.
Yeah.
So if you keep the reps from failure constant, what you want to see, whether it's on a week by week basis or, you know, every couple of weeks or something, is an increase in the reps performed or the load that you can lift for a given number of reps. In order to provide more stimulus, sometimes you will have to push a little bit closer to failure or increase the weight and do the same number of reps or something. But that doesn't need to run out ahead of your abilities too far. What it should be is, you know, you do training, and if the training is effective, you get better. If you can push a little bit harder and you're still recovering from it, then by all means, push a little bit harder. You know, chop the reps in reserve away, add a little bit of weight, do the same number of reps, do that. But then chronically, you want to see those improvements in performance underlying it, basically.
I think if you did week one of your program and you were instructed by Will Berkman to leave 3 reps in the tank at the end of your set, and then you did 60 kilos, 27 reps over 3 sets, the next week you were like, okay, well, this is what I did last week, but it was 3 reps in reserve, and then you do a total of, say, 9 extra reps across the 3 sets. You've basically taken a massive leap in progression from the week before that you probably didn't need to do, and that, therefore, is reducing the longevity of the training program you've got and how long you can keep that bench press in the movement and keep progressing it and keep generating the stimulus. Because one thing that you know, really hammered to me at the start was sufficient stimulus is better, I would say better, than maximal stimulus.
Yeah.
Because you can do it for longer and get more out of what you're doing and like eke out more progression over time and therefore more adaptation.
Yeah. So what you're describing is a concept I sometimes call headroom in training, which is basically the distance between what you are doing now and the absolute most that you could do, right? And if what you are doing now is sufficient to get you better, then the absolute most you can do will increase a little bit as well. And usually what will happen is, because we structure training programs with some progression, is the amount that you're asked to do is going to increase at a rate probably slightly faster than the most you can do, you know, after that newbie period where you just get crazy better really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, once you're an intermediate, your training will progress a little bit faster than your body can keep up with, and you'll accumulate some fatigue and things that will slow down your body a bit as well. But if you are seeing the absolute most you can improve over time, that's great. Instead, what you'll see is what Max said, is you chew away at that gap between what you're doing and the most you can do until eventually you run into a wall and you either need to deload or, you know, cycle back on your weights and work back up again. Accelerating that progression too fast, if it doesn't actually make you adapt any faster, like Max said, shortens the time for which you can train productively before you have to take a step back. And so it's not necessarily desirable. You said something else there that I could have addressed, but that's more or less the concept is, you know, do enough to get you better. It's not going to be super duper easy no matter what. So I'm not saying go and fart ass around in the gym. Do do training that is hard.
But right? Not as hard as like you're killing yourself when you don't need to do it.
No. Do hard enough to get you better. The evidence that it is hard enough is that your performance over time will improve. If your performance isn't improving, then you need to address your training, your recovery, or the amount of work that you're doing.
And it could be doing more.
Could be doing more, absolutely. Fix one of those things, but you should see baseline improvements in your performance without you necessarily having to absolutely push all the way. And if you can give yourself enough headroom, so enough space between what you're doing and the absolute most you can do, that you can let your training stimulus progress a little bit without blowing yourself out of the water after 1 or 2 weeks of productive training, yeah. Then you're going to set yourself up for really long productive training cycles before you have to really take a week of rest or something before you can go again.
Yeah, so you mentioned the concept of you'll hit the wall eventually. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've sort of executed this correctly, and even if you have sort of kept that headway, or headroom there, and you've done sufficient, not maximal, you might keep progressing for say 8 to 12 weeks in the same movement rather than just like rushing to doing as much as you can, completely effing yourself up and then having to change stuff. But even if you do it correctly, there will be a point where you'll have to push things as hard as you can and you'll hit that wall where you can't really progress unless you change something. So right now we've kind of by default covered all the topics I wanted to get to.
Yeah.
And we're at progression, but now let's talk about periodization. So right. You've hit the wall, but you've done it correctly, so you've irked out or eat, whatever the fucking word is.
Eat.
As much time of productive training that you can with this sort of regime, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's time, you've hit that wall and it's time to change things up and then reclimb that ladder mm-hmm. from that 3 reps in reserve sort of mark. What do we do? How do we go about it?
There's a complicated answer and a simple answer. So we'll start with the simple one, which is that if the training that you were doing up until now has been very effective, then there's not necessarily any reason to change it, unless there is, but we can touch on that after. But if it's been very effective so far and you've hit the wall, probably all you need to do is give yourself some extra time for recovery. So you might implement a deload week, or you might back cycle the weights that you're doing a little bit just to allow for some extra recovery. So again, if you think back to my concept of headroom, you've gone probably above the bracket of sufficient stimulus and hit right up at where you can. So we can back off to the sufficient stimulus, right? Mm-hmm. So say you've gone from doing your 60 kilo bench for 3 sets and doing, you know, say you did 3 sets of 10 at 60 and that's enough to get you better. You've now bumped all the way up to whatever, close to 70 kilos and you've done 4 sets of 8 and that was the hardest thing you could have ever done.
Mm-hmm. And you can't do 72.5 and get 4 sets of 8.
It's no, you couldn't possibly, right? Yeah. You know, at that point, you might back the weights off 10% or something, you know, and drop back to just 3 sets for a week. Yeah. So let yourself freshen up a little bit. You know, you do 3 sets of 8 or 10 at 62 kilos or something like that. You feel a little bit fresher and then you might start the same progression again. You'll do, you know, 3 sets or 4 sets now with 2 or 3 reps in reserve at 62.5 kilos. So you might get a bunch of sets of 10 to 12 out there and then slowly start increasing the weight on the bar as you start hitting those maximum rep numbers, you know, in the 12 to 15 range, go back to 65. And what you should see if your training is effective is next time you hit the wall, instead of it being at 70 kilos, it might be at 75 or 77, right? So you can actually maintain your exact same regime and just back the stimulus back off and let yourself build back up again. That's a really, really good place to start. You had something to add to that?
Yeah, but if you change the movement or the stimulus or even the rep range, the ceiling or the amount that you have to do to be sufficient might actually be substantially lower than just simply backing off a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you've changed variables and it's sort of like to the body somewhat of a novelty.
Yeah.
So then you can not, rather than going like, you know, let's use time spent in the gym as a proxy. So starting at half an hour, building up to 45 minutes and then going back to 40 minutes, but then building back up to say 55 minutes, you could actually go half an hour to 45 minutes in the gym, change variables, and then half an hour would be sufficient rather than, and then you could build back up to 45. Because if you do the former, you would end up being in the gym for fucking ever, right? In theory.
Yeah. That is true. And so if you were, again, we'll stick with bench press because that's been our example for the whole episode. You could change that movement out. So you could say, I am going to, you know, I've hit my wall on flat bench. I'm going to cycle this out and do dumbbell presses. And there are advantages to it. Like you said, it's a novel stimulus. So although every horizontal pushing exercise you do is going to work your pecs to some degree, different ones will put slightly different strains through your muscle fibers. You'll get slightly different adaptations to it. You'll also get some different neurological adaptations. So your, you know, the technical adaptations and things that also contribute to strength will change. So you can do something fresh. You'll buy yourself a little bit of extra headroom for progression. I'm not certain that it will actually make you grow more to change your exercises, but it does keep things fresh.
I would agree.
What I think is really good about it is if you've done bench for, say, 12 weeks and you swap bench out and you do dumbbell presses for 8 weeks and you go through that same process of just training your dumbbell press really hard, because it still works the same muscles as bench press and it's reasonably similar, you'll make some improvements in it that will improve your capacity to bench press later. So when you do cycle back to bench press, it's a little bit fresh. You don't have to do quite as much work to progress. You start from there. Your ceiling will have gone up a little bit by virtue of you still training, because if you trained, you've probably gotten a bit bigger and stronger, and then you can do that same bench press progression again and overshoot it a little bit, and in the meantime, you've kept training nice and fresh. You might have gotten some slightly distinct adaptations to the muscles and things by doing a different movement. I'm not certain that that's super important, but there are certainly benefits to doing it, and it's a totally viable way of going about things to just sub out a movement for a new one when you've more or less eked out all of the games that you
games
all
that you're games going
to, all the yeah my mind's on Nintendo right now. When you've eked out all of the games that you're going to in a short period with a given movement, you can absolutely substitute it for something similar and go through the exact same process, and you will get, you know, pretty similar results on a muscle by muscle level. That's one of the great things about training for size, is you're not really bound to any movements provided that they are, you know, sufficient for your goals.
Yeah. Cool, man. I think we've covered off a lot, but I just want to add one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to zoom out a lot, but then use the idea of sufficient, not maximal, and not doing more than you need. Not only just because why, but also because you could spend that time elsewhere or doing other activities. Mm-hmm. If you're someone who's looking to maintain muscle and drop some body fat, now in most instances, unless you're very advanced or very lean trying to get leaner, the amount of work you need to do in the gym to maintain your muscle and get a reasonable amount of fat loss is actually not that much. Mm-hmm. And doing more, like thinking that you need to go into the gym every single day, probably isn't true. And once you've done enough to give yourself enough of a stimulative effect to maintain what you've got, doing more isn't better, and you might be better off just like doing something to burn more calories and promote that energy deficit, like going for a walk hypothetically.
Yes. So
it depends though.
Yeah. I think what you said is good. The stimulus to maintain muscle is certainly less than it is to build it. That's number one.
Mm.
Number two, when you're in a calorie deficit, you're more or less by definition also in a recovery deficit. So the amount of work that you can sustain and recover from, and the frequency with which you can do so, is going to be down a little bit. So trying to work yourself in the gym too hard into a calorie deficit can actually come back to bite you, because you're not going to be recovered well enough to give that really important stimulus to your muscles that says, we need to maintain these. So, and also on like a really acute level, just within a workout, if every exercise that you do is very, very high volume, then the stuff that you do later in the session when you've already come in a little bit fatigued by virtue of eating less food is going to be done with lower quality. So focusing on doing a bit, again, within those sensible ranges we said of doing a few hardish sets each time you train, you know, so 3 to 5 hardish sets is probably a good place to start, per muscle group. Focusing on the quality of them rather than really trying to jam in a lot more quantity is a really good place to start. And if you hit every muscle, you could actually go as low as 1 time a week when cutting, but if you hit every muscle a couple of times a week with a few hardish sets, you're going to do all you need to do just to maintain size. And then, like Max said, that frees up time and energy to go do other things, whether it's for enjoyment or for burning calories. And doing things like, yeah, going for a walk or going for a surf, like our hypothetical dude way back at the start, can do a lot more for your well-being without necessarily taxing your recovery. And if you're
just add to that, not just your well-being, but also your ability to actually hear
Yeah, totally.
What you need to do.
Totally, and I think
so you're happier. You're like, oh, I don't fucking hate my life doing this diet, so I'm actually going to be able to continue doing it.
Yeah, and that's actually a really nice note because it ties it back to what I said right at the very start, which is that feasibility is really important.
Yeah.
You're presumably doing this stuff to improve your life, which means that you should be doing it in a way that you enjoy and that facilitates you, you know, living your life to the fullest. So if you can make your training elegant enough that you meet your needs as a trainee, whilst also allowing you to do the things that you enjoy that help you adhere to your diet and don't make it a slog, then you're going to get all the returns you could have gotten and feel better doing it than if you try and shoehorn yourself into like a really hardcore approach that doesn't actually suit your disposition.
Yeah. And just one more thing I wanted to add to that. The deeper the deficit you're in, like the more aggressive the deficit, the higher the amount you need to do to maintain your muscle. But the less, the more impact on your ability to recover will be present. So that that range of sufficient to too much is now narrower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's conceptually true. And so when you are in a very aggressive stimulus, it becomes even more important to get quality work in as opposed to maximizing work per session. Because although you need to do enough to maintain the muscles, if you, the work you do is junk, then you don't get the return on it. You just get tired.
Yeah, exactly. Mate, I think that was very good.
Well, thank you very much.
I think we should probably close it off there. Would you think we've... Yeah,
I...
you wanted to cover?
No, that was a really good chat. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you. just for the listeners, guys, you should follow Will because even though he's a fucking asshole sometimes, he does put out good content on Instagram. And he has a very good podcast with Alex Hayes called The Weekly Weight, spelled weekly as in you're a weak cunt.
Wow, you can swear on this podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's on iTunes and all that sort of shit. So definitely have a listen to that and follow Will on Instagram at
www.berkman, that's B-E-R-K-M-A-N, P-T.
Yeah. Definitely do those things.
I should add, I also have a website. I'm just going to plug myself shamelessly. I have a
website. Use my affiliate link.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I have a website. It's myname.com, so willberkman.com. I've written a bunch of articles and stuff on it. So you can read some stuff about diet on it. You can read some stuff about training. It does. Most of my articles go more in depth about certain training concepts. So if you actually want some nitty gritty numbers based stuff, you can. But I also do try and write with some sort of like, you know, global idea of just making training kind of feasible and appropriate on an individual basis too. So you can check that out as well.
Yeah. And you can also check out the next episode of Weekly Wage, which will be featuring me because we'll inevitably invite me on the podcast.
Yeah, now that Mac's an official powerlifter, he's going to come on the podcast in short order, I'm sure.
Yes, definitely. All right, guys, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much, Will, for taking the time to have a chat. And if you have any further questions, feel free to reach out to myself or Will, maybe. I don't know,
you can reach out to me. That's fine.
Yeah, I'll love it. Give you like a one-word answer, though, so just don't be offended. He does it to everyone. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Talk to you next time. Cheers.